Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Christopher Jones Cruz, Anne Ball, Katie Weaver and Dan Friedel, and Bruce Alpert and Jill Robbins. Later, Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Christopher Jones Cruz.
Ban Ki-moon will finish his term as Secretary General of the United Nations at the end of December. He spoke with VOA recently about his 10 years as the UN's top official. As Secretary General, Ban has traveled the world trying to prevent and end conflicts. He has campaigned in support of development and to reduce the effects of climate change. He also has met with refugees, victims of natural disasters, and the leaders of many countries. Ban says historians will be asked to judge his years as the UN's chief. He is very satisfied with his efforts to end poverty.
I'm confident that by 2030, all the people will be in a much better way in living in a healthier, more prosperous and more peaceful world. That's my hope.
Ban is also pleased with diplomatic efforts leading to the Paris Climate Accord, which took effect in November. The agreement is designed to help fight rising temperatures.
It required a lot of political mobilization, and it required forging a stronger partnership and raising the awareness of the government leaders and business leaders and civil societies.
Under Ban's leadership, the United Nations has worked to improve women's rights and end the use of execution as punishment for criminal activity. The UN has also fought violence and discrimination against members of the LGBT community. But Ban says there is much work still to be done.
When it comes to continuing crisis in Syria and elsewhere, South Sudan, Yemen, Central African Republic, and elsewhere, we have to show unity of purpose and the solidarity for the people. Often, I have been shocked by the lack of empathy of some world leaders.
Before becoming Secretary General, Ban served as South Korea's foreign minister. He is worried about the increasing tension between South and North Korea. The tension has resulted from the North's nuclear and missile tests. Ban tried to go to North Korea last year, but the country's leaders canceled his visit just before he was to arrive.
It was a unilateral cancellation. I really tried to do whatever I can to contribute to, first of all, reduction of tensions on the Korean Peninsula and also promote the reconciliation between the two parts of Korea.
Many people have talked about what Ban will do after the end of his term as Secretary General. He is 72 years old, but he has a lot of energy and is known to work long days. Some observers believe he will campaign for the South Korean presidency in 2017. The country's current president was recently impeached. If she leaves office, a new presidential election could take place soon. Ban says South Korea has, in his words, resilient and mature democratic institutions. He believes the country will survive the current crisis. He would not confirm or deny that he plans to campaign for the presidency.
When I become a civilian, private citizen, then I will have to discuss this matter with the leaders of Korean society, my friends, my family.
I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Iran's main air travel company, Iran Air, has signed an agreement with American manufacturer Boeing to buy 80 passenger airplanes. The two companies announced the $16.6 billion deal Sunday after a signing ceremony in Iran's capital, Tehran. The agreement calls for Boeing to provide 50 737 planes and 30 777 aircraft to Iran Air over the next 10 years. Boeing said the first planes would start arriving in 2018. It is the biggest agreement to be signed between an Iranian and American company since Iran's revolution in 1979. Iran had previously been barred from buying planes from U.S.-based Boeing because of economic sanctions against the country. The U.S. government approved the deal in September. The approval was the result of an international nuclear agreement signed by Iran and six world powers in July 2015. The agreement eased restrictions on Iran in exchange for limits on Iran's nuclear program. The U.S. House of Representatives voted last month to block aircraft sales to Iran, possibly affecting the Boeing deal. The measure must still pass the Senate. U.S. President Barack Obama has said he will veto the bill if it reaches his desk before he leaves office on January 20th. Boeing said in a statement the deal would support tens of thousands of U.S. jobs directly related to production of the planes. Iran's transportation minister said the agreement represented a historic day for Iran. He added that the deal would create 8,000 jobs in Iran. The official indirectly noted the incoming administration of U.S. President-elect Donald Trump. "We hope that despite changes in the U.S. administration, the country will remain loyal to its commitments," he said. During his campaign for president, Trump strongly criticized the nuclear agreement. He called it a disaster and the worst deal ever negotiated. Trump also threatened to end the deal if elected president. I'm Ann Ball.
Donald Trump's election as President of the United States came as a shock to many Democratic Party activists. Now, Democrats are considering what the party did wrong and what its future might be. Most Democrats, and even some Republican Party activists, believed Hillary Clinton would win the election last month. The former Secretary of State was the Democrats' presidential candidate. But Republicans, under businessman Trump, won the presidency and kept control of the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives. It will be 2 years before Democrats can try to take control of Congress.
John Fortier works at the Bipartisan Policy Center in Washington, D.C. He says the Democrats must now decide how they will oppose the policies of Trump and the Republicans. In a recent speech, Senator Bernie Sanders said Democrats must find a way to persuade working-class Americans to vote for Democratic candidates again. Many Democrats believe Trump and his supporters will cancel parts of the Affordable Care Act. The act, known as Obamacare, is one of President Barack Obama's top legislative measures. Democrats also believe the Republicans will reduce taxes on businesses.
Chuck Schumer of New York is the new leader of the Democrats in the Senate. He has said the party is ready to oppose Trump's policies. But, he says, Democrats may cooperate with the future president on issues like spending on roads or other infrastructure. Such spending is popular with Democrats because they believe it provides jobs for many people. The party must also prepare for elections in 2018, in which many more Democratic senators will seek re-election than Republicans. Many of the Democrats are from states that Trump won in the 2016 election. Tim Ryan is a Democratic congressman from Ohio. He was unsuccessful in his attempt to replace longtime California Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi as top Democrat in the House of Representatives. Like Sanders, Ryan is worried about how to get Americans to vote for Democrats. He spoke after losing his campaign to remove Pelosi.
And I believe it in my heart that if we're going to win as Democrats, we need to have an economic message that resonates in every corner of this country.
Almost one-third of the Democrats in the House voted for Tim Ryan. New York Congressman Joseph Crowley was not one of them. But he agreed with Ryan that, in Crowley's words, Democrats are the party with ideas and a vision. But we need to do a better job of connecting with people on the ground who made it clear they weren't listening or couldn't hear what we had to say. Because Clinton was defeated, the Democrats do not have a national leader. Some experts believe Barack Obama may work on energizing the party after he leaves the White House. Obama said recently that Democrats must continue to keep their promise of ensuring economic fairness.
So there are going to be a core set of values that shouldn't be up for debate, should be our North Star. But how we organize politically, I think, is something that we should spend some time thinking about.
Trump won the northern states of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. All three states had voted for a Democrat in every presidential election since 1992. This year, many white working-class voters in those areas voted for Trump. Trump had success with voters who felt ignored by the Democratic Party. Rebecca Theoni of Iowa voted for Democratic candidates for many years. But last month, she voted for Trump. Theoni told the Associated Press that Trump got out there and showed he was serious about keeping jobs. Many people in America's upper Midwest said similar things. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
The United States is expected to execute fewer people in 2016 than any year in the past 25 years. So far this year, 19 people have been put to death for their crimes nationwide. That is down from 28 last year and 98 in 1998. Those numbers come from the Death Penalty Information Center, a nonprofit organization based in Washington, D.C. The death penalty is sometimes called the ultimate punishment. The question of whether it should be used as punishment continues to divide Americans. Supporters say that people found guilty of horrible crimes should get the ultimate punishment. They believe the death penalty will act as a deterrent. By deterrent, they mean it might cause a person to decide against killing someone. But opponents argue that a moral society does not put people to death. They say when an innocent person is found guilty of a crime, there is no way to fix the mistake if that person already has been executed. Breanne Swan is a singer-songwriter, wife, and mother of two. She lives in Toronto, Canada. Swan opposes the death penalty on moral grounds. 2 years ago, she began sending letters to Ramiro Gonzalez. He is jailed on death row in the American state of Texas. He was sentenced to die after he admitted killing 18-year-old Bridget Townsend in 2001. Gonzalez asked Swan to come to Texas and witness his execution, which was set for August. She agreed and decided to make the visit even when the execution was delayed. Swan and Gonzalez talked for 10 hours. She said there was sadness on the last day of her Texas visit. Both Swan and Gonzalez knew the next time she might see him would be the day of his execution, she said. Swan wrote to Texas Governor Greg Abbott, asking him to stop the execution. When Gonzalez killed Bridget Townsend, he was 18, addicted to drugs, dealing with the loss of his beloved aunt and years of sexual abuse by a male relative, Swan said. Today, she told Abbott, he is a gentle and kind man who has a deeply spiritual life. Gonzalez did a terrible thing at 18, but he is not that person today, she added.
Voters in three states, California, Nebraska, and Oklahoma, voted last month to permit use of the death penalty for some crimes. 31 states give courts the right to sentence prisoners to death. 19 states do not permit the death sentence. More Americans support the death penalty than oppose it, 49% for and 42% against. That information comes from the Pew Research Center. But the percentage is down 7% from last year and way down from the 1990s, when 80% of the U.S. population supported the death penalty, Pew said.
Robert Dunham is executive director of the Death Penalty Information Center. He opposes the death penalty. Dunham said a good number of people have been sentenced to death despite strong questions about their guilt. Michael Rushford is president of the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation. He supports the death penalty. Without the threat of execution, he said, it is very difficult to stop murderers from killing again or attacking their guards. People already serving life sentences know that, without the death penalty, courts cannot increase their sentences, no matter what they do, Rushford said. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Bruce Alpert.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Garlic is one of the most common cooking ingredients around the world. Many dishes in Europe, Africa, Asia, and the Americas use this strong flavored vegetable. Garlic is similar to other bulb-shaped plants, including onions, chives, leeks, and scallions. But garlic is special. For centuries, people have used garlic not only for cooking, but also for medicine. Researchers at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center and Cornell University studied the medicinal use of garlic throughout history. They found references to garlic in ancient texts from Egypt, Greece, Rome, China, and India. For example, in ancient Greece and Rome, people considered garlic an aid to strength and endurance. The original Olympic athletes in Greece ate garlic to improve their performance. The ancient Romans fed garlic to the soldiers and sailors. Workers who built the pyramids in Egypt ate garlic. In fact, this is a theme throughout early history: workers eating garlic to increase their strength. But why is garlic such a healthy food? The short answer is that garlic creates a gas called hydrogen sulfide. At first, hydrogen sulfide does not seem very healthy. In fact, it is toxic and flammable. It smells like rotten eggs. But it does an important job in our bodies. Hydrogen sulfide relaxes blood vessels. Relaxing blood vessels, in turn, allows more oxygen to travel to the body's organs. It lowers high blood pressure and protects the body against cardiovascular disease. Cardio relates to the heart, and vascular relates to blood vessels. Some researchers in China have gone so far as to call hydrogen sulfide the key to a longer life. In a 2007 study, researchers at the University of Alabama at Birmingham studied how garlic increased hydrogen sulfide and how that, in turn, affected red blood cells. David Krauss led that study. At the time, he was an associate professor in the university's Departments of Environmental Health Sciences and Biology. He and his team performed their study on rats. They found that when garlic compounds changed into hydrogen sulfide in the vascular system, the gas caused the muscles to relax. In their report, the researchers wrote, "This relaxation is the first step in lowering high blood pressure and gaining heart protective effects." They found that these healthy effects are closely linked to the hydrogen sulfide produced from garlic compounds interacting with red blood cells. In 2013, scientists were finally able to see this process happen. Chemists Alexander Lippert of Southern Methodist University in Dallas and Vivian S. Lin discovered how to observe this process in living human cells. In a Science Daily news release, Lippert explains that they made a chemical probe that reacts and lights up when live human cells generate hydrogen sulfide. Lippert's real-time video features live human cells making hydrogen sulfide. Their discovery has opened the door to more research into the health benefits of garlic and the production of hydrogen sulfide in the body. In a 2015 experiment at Penn State University, researchers injected a solution that would create hydrogen sulfide in the arms of healthy young adults. They wanted to see what hydrogen sulfide would do to a small area of blood vessels. The initial findings are that hydrogen sulfide widened blood vessels, which then increased the flow of blood. These researchers plan to continue their research. They published their findings in the Journal of Physiology. But let's leave the laboratory and go to the kitchen. Don't throw out older garlic that has sprouted. You may have thought that garlic growing light green sprouts was past its prime, or old, and on its way to the trash bin. But not so fast. Scientists have reported in the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry that this older garlic has even more properties that are good for our bodies than fresh garlic. When researchers tested garlic that had sprouted for 5 days, they found it had higher antioxidant activity than fresher bulbs of garlic. Also, to get the full effect of garlic's health benefits, do not add it to food or cook with it immediately. Cutting, crushing, or mincing garlic releases the healthy compound found in the vegetable. But heating the garlic or adding it to other ingredients prevents the release of this healthy compound. So cut or crush or mince the garlic and let it rest by itself for a couple minutes. So, are there any downsides to garlic? Well, the same reason garlic is good for us and good in dishes, that strong sulfur odor, is the same reason it gives us bad breath. But there might be a cure for that too. Yet another study found that eating an apple or lettuce after eating garlic cuts down on the strong garlic smell on one's breath. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.